Hello, and welcome to Burn Court, the court of moral victories. We are bridging the gap between no recourse and legal recourse. We review and analyze listener-submitted disputes and decide a winner. Before we get started, I have a couple of announcements today. First, some bad news. Our YouTube channel is almost done, and soon you may have to look at my ugly mug while I ramble on in my undignified, self-righteous way. But some good news, too. At least the sound should improve soon, as I recently put it in an order for better equipment. So here's a shameful plug for Sweetwater, the online music and recording supply retailer. Thank you very much, and thanks to Brian for helping me navigate all the options. Also, if I get something factually incorrect on the show, please reach out. I want to hear about it. If you don't like the verdict, go to burncourt.com and vote. And if you think I missed something, a crucial dispositive religious covenant or something similar, send an email to burn@burncourt.com and let me know what I missed. Without further ado, we have our first real listener-submitted dispute today, though I will be putting out more demos, this time between an employee and their employer. The parties have both requested anonymity, and I understand there may be an NDA involved, so we're going to honor those requests today. This one is the broken relocation promise, employee versus a Big Four accounting firm. Imagine landing your dream job, the prestige, the title, the shiny laptop still smelling of corporate optimism. You uproot your life, say goodbye to your favorite coffee shop, and move to another state. Then a partner says, "Switch divisions and you can go back home to work in our office there." You switch. The promise evaporates as a more senior partner reneges. Welcome to corporate cartography, where remote means remote chance. Here's a recap of the actual facts. A highly credentialed professional holding a CPA license, which is a certified public accountant, a JD, which is a Juris Doctor, and an LLM in taxation, which is a Master of Laws in a particular legal subject, joined a major global consulting firm, one of the Big Four, fulfilling her career dream. The role was in international tax, a prestigious and intellectually rewarding group, but required relocation from her beloved home state to a big city in another state, which she disliked. After joining, she spoke with a partner from the insurance tax group, who informally suggested that if she switched departments, she could return to work from the office in her home state, which only had people from the insurance group. Enticed by the chance to go home, she transferred to the insurance group. She continued making preparations to move home, telling friends, family, and business acquaintances, and traveling home several times, and even putting in an offer on a house. And then, dun-dun-dun, in steps the grouchy old senior partner, who quickly overrides the junior partner and reneged on the deal, leaving our heroine stuck in the drudgery of insurance tax in a state she hated. She remained stuck, disillusioned, and feeling misled. The experience soured her view of corporate integrity and left her questioning whether career advancement should ever come at the cost of personal roots. So now we'll dive in to our first lens, legal. Just a preface here, this case did not take place in Vermont, but I understand similar law applies, and Vermont law is what we typically use, so to be consistent, we're sticking to that here. Vermont, like most states, follows the at-will employment doctrine. Either party may terminate employment for any reason not unlawful. Promises of relocation or departmental transfer are not enforceable unless formalized in writing or accompanied by detrimental reliance sufficient to establish promissory estoppel, which we'll get to in a minute. Under the doctrine of promissory estoppel, Restatement Second of Contract, Section 90, a promise is enforceable if the promisor should reasonably expect reliance, that's number one, number two, the promisee does rely, and three, injustice can be avoided only by enforcing the promise. The partner's statement, if you switch, you can move back home, might satisfy elements 1 and 2, but 3 is weak. The employee could resign, and damages would be speculative. Courts rarely enforce vague internal promises of job location, especially within multinational firms. In this situation, and I'll explain more at the end of the legal section, this employee did receive a small settlement at the end. But this small settlement reflects what Vermont law would recognize, not a full breach, but a moral failure of reliance induced without good faith clarity. Under Vermont contract law, verbal promises may form implied contracts if reliance is reasonable and documented, but without writing, it's vapor. An analogous law is the Massachusetts Wage Act, which protects pay, not hope. Courts call these illusory promises. Going back to promissory estoppel for a minute, if someone reasonably relied on a clear promise and suffered harm, equity can intervene. Sadly, claims like "the partner said I could" rarely wins if the offer letter didn't. So yes, it feels like betrayal. Legally, it's more like bad luck. However, there may be some hope. There is the covenant of good faith and dealing, which is an implied legal principle in every contract that requires both parties to act honestly and fairly to ensure the other party can receive the benefits of the agreement. It prevents a party from acting in bad faith to undermine the contract's purpose, such as by abusing discretion or exploiting loopholes. This covenant is not a separate duty, but a part of contractual law designed to ensure parties act in a way consistent with the contract's honest and reasonable expectations. Key aspects of the covenant are implied duty, which is the covenant is typically not written into a contract, but is understood to be part of it from the start. Honesty and fairness, which requires parties to act with honesty in fact and to observe reasonable commercial standards of fair dealing. Purpose, the core purpose is to ensure that each party can receive the benefits of the bargain they made without the other party unfairly frustrating that right. Examples of bad faith. This can include abusing discretion granted in the contract or taking advantage of ambiguities to prevent the other party from receiving the contract's benefits. And that second part seems to fit this case pretty good. Limitations? Well, the covenant does not create new duties not already in the contract. It cannot be used to rewrite the agreement or impose obligations beyond what was explicitly or implicitly agreed upon, which is why the offer letter is always going to win out. Consequences of the breach, however, can have some legal impact. A breach of this covenant can have legal consequences and may lead to remedies such as damages, and in some cases, punitive damages. Lastly, there are elements of principal and agency law here, as in the partner is an agent for the partnership. But modern international partnerships are more complex, with some junior partners holding the title of partner only, without the corresponding equity ownership. A more senior partner, and a partner in the more traditional sense, likely has the ability to override and undo promises made by the junior partner, who overstepped their boundaries, even if the two partners appeared equal in the eyes of the staff. Eventually, she resigned, threatened legal action, and received a modest settlement, which mostly went to her lawyer. So she essentially won a moral victory, as explained in our last episode. But one wonders if the months of stress and losing your job were worth it. We tend to call such a victory a Pyrrhic victory, which is when a win is achieved at such great cost to the victor, it is almost equivalent to a defeat. Here's a couple life lessons. 1. Get it in writing. 2. Never trust HR. They aren't there for the employees. They're there so the employees don't sue the employer. And lastly, this one from a great movie, The Spanish Prisoner, and said by Steve Martin. Always do business as if the person you're doing business with is trying to screw you, because he probably is. And if he's not, you can be pleasantly surprised. It is a good lesson, but I think in this case, the junior partner who made the promise had good intentions. He was just overruled by a more senior partner and did nothing about it. Moving on to our historical lens. From pharaohs who shorted pyramid workers on beer rations to 19th century railroad barons who lured settlers west with phantom towns, labor has always chased promises management couldn't keep. The modern corporate relocation clause descends from post-World War II mobility culture. Companies moved people like chess pieces. In the 21st century, remote work flipped the board, but the manipulation remains. More modern promises of professional advancement tied to relocation date back to the Industrial Age, when firms lured skilled labor with vague assurances of stability. During the 20th century, white-collar professionals, like in our case, increasingly encountered the same pattern. The rhetoric of making partner and blind loyalty masked the transactional realities of corporate culture. And although this wasn't in Vermont, in Vermont's small, community-centered professional culture, integrity and word-of-mouth reputation still carry moral weight. But by contrast, large institutions often operate in impersonal systems where verbal assurances dissolve into corporate ambiguity with little to no recourse. The tension between trust and bureaucracy is as old as commerce itself. History's refrain: promises cost nothing until someone tries to cash them. On to our literary lens. In Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman, published in 1949, Willie Loman chases a corporate dream that never quite materializes, believing loyalty will be repaid with dignity, but discovers that business promises are rarely binding. Charles Dickens warns us in Hard Times about industrial hypocrisy, where managers preach morality while exploiting loyalty. The novel critiques the dehumanizing effects of industrialization and explores themes of social injustice and the importance of compassion. And in Franz Kafka's work, In the Castle, published in 1926, faceless authority shifts the goalposts so often that sanity becomes an act of rebellion. Ask yourself, how often has an employer said to you that if you do A, B, and C, you'll get the bonus or the promotion, only to find out you need to complete an entire alphabet of tasks before they'll follow through, if they ever do? Here, the employee is a modern Willie Loman, with far more intellect and integrity, seduced not by greed, but by the hope of reconciling success with belonging. The partner's broken words mirrors the quiet betrayal Miller described when the system rewards charm and ambiguity more than truth. The literary verdict: promises without accountability are fiction, but at least novelists admit it. On to our philosophical lens. Immanuel Kant, who we've turned to a number of times, a German philosopher, 18th century, believed promises carry moral law. In his groundwork for the metaphysics of morals, breaking one violates the categorical imperative. The partner's assurance created a duty of honesty. Failing to clarify or fulfill it treats the employee as a means to departmental needs, not an end with dignity and expectation. John Stuart Mill, 19th century England, the utilitarian, would measure the outcome: minimal happiness gained for the firm versus deep personal loss and disillusionment for the employee, an imbalance of moral calculus, leaving the company deep in the red. From Aristotle, in Nicomachean Ethics, define virtue as balance and justice, as giving each their due. The partner's failure to honor his word reflects injustice through excess self-interest, the vice of expedience. A virtuous leader aligns words with deeds. The partner lacked that mean, proving virtue can't be budgeted quarterly. Confucius, who taught on trustworthiness as the root of leadership, would say, "Credibility is the foundation of governance." And I have a feeling this one is coming back several times, partly with respect to an episode on taxes and partly on the current political climate in the United States. Without reliability, no hierarchy can endure. The partner's dishonesty violates proper conduct, fracturing relational harmony. The Hindu philosophy in the Bhagavad Gita defines dharma as righteous duty, to speak and act with integrity regardless of outcome. The partner's lapse is a moral breach. The employee's resignation restores her personal dharma, preserving self-respect, but again, at great professional and emotional cost. And in this case, when the junior partner didn't act to cure the override by the senior partner, they lost their moral integrity as well. The philosophical synthesis is, dishonesty is inefficiency of the soul. Speaking of souls, now on to the religious lens. Christianity would say, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Stick to your word, from Matthew 5:37. Promise-breaking erodes not only trust, but identity. Judaism says, the Talmud condemns what is referred to as deception of the mind and considers it as theft of trust itself. According to Islam, faithfulness, or amana, is a moral contract. Betraying a promise violates divine trust, from the Quran 23:8. Taoism. The Tao values alignment with truth and simplicity. Overpromising breaks the natural flow of harmony between people. Across all faiths, false assurance without intent of delivery is a spiritual trespass. Here it is more complicated because the original intent appeared genuine, but then the senior partner did not honor the junior partner's promise. The junior partner also did nothing to attempt to cure the harm either. He had his own family and job security to be concerned about at that point. But does that absolve him of all wrong here? And lastly, onto our social norms. American corporate culture prizes flexibility, but often weaponizes it against workers seeking stability. Relocation promises, internal mobility, and hybrid flexibility have become buzzwords masking managerial expedience. Public sentiment increasingly condemns corporate doublespeak. Younger professionals prize authenticity and work-life balance over prestige. The employee's yearning to return home resonates with a national reawakening toward local identity and emotional well-being over titles and salary. Ultimately, job hopping is normal, but breaking trust isn't. Glassdoor reviews are modern sermons. Great pay, leadership lies, they say. Remote work redefined loyalty from tenure to truthfulness. Workers expect honesty more than perks. Socially, the partner's vague promise violates modern professional ethics, misleading a colleague for short-term gain. And for this episode, we did splash in a bit of science here, so we're going to just have a small sentence from our seventh lens, science, this case, economics and psychology. Behavioral economists call this psychological contract breach. Consequences include decreased productivity, cynicism, and turnover, which can be extremely costly for business. Neuroscience shows betrayal activates pain centers similar to physical injury. Broken promises literally hurt. Moral judgment claim. The employee has the stronger moral claim. She acted in good faith, sacrificed prestige for belonging, and relied on the firm's promise. The partner's failure to clarify or deliver was not illegal, but profoundly unethical. You can't run a moral deficit forever. A company that treats trust like a line item will soon file for ethical bankruptcy. In Burn Court terms, this was not a breach of contract. It was a breach of conscience. That is our show today, and thank you for listening. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, and on the website burncourt.com, where you can also vote on who you think should be the moral victor. Justice may be subjective, but the burn is absolute.